Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Actus Podcast, a bi-weekly program dedicated to bringing you closer to the difference makers in CDI and sharing the latest news relevant to the CDI profession and Actus. I'm Carla Kozak, Editorial Manager of Products and Events, and I'll be your host for today's show. Today's topic is malnutrition quality improvement, and my guest today is Sheila Snyder, MD, FAAP, Pediatric Hospitalist and CDI Physician Advisor for Children's Nebraska in Omaha, Nebraska. The majority of her work is clinical, but her main motivation is to improve clinical outcomes for her patients and accurately document their care. Snyder serves as a physician champion for the hospital's EPIC inpatient team, which allows her to leverage the EMR to help produce excellent CDI outcomes. She has presented on pediatric CDI at the Actus Conference for several years and is a contributor to the book Pediatric CDI Building Blocks for Success. Now, a quick reminder that the Actus podcast offers 0.5 Actus CEUs for the first 4 days after posting, which can be used towards your CCDS or CCDSO recertification requirements. I'll share the instructions at the end of the show, so do stay tuned for that. And now, before we jump into our topic, a brief word from today's sponsor. This episode of the Actus podcast is brought to you by the new book, Pediatric CDI Foundations. Newly revised, it provides an in-depth look at a variety of documentation concerns specific to childhood conditions. Whether you need help securing administrative support from the get-go, or you're looking for guidance on delving deep into the documentation depths, this book provides the foundational knowledge needed to get your pediatric program off the ground. It addresses the following key topics: basic tenets for establishing a pediatric CDI program, pathophysiology fundamentals for pediatric diagnoses, coding and documentation requirements for common pediatric diagnoses, techniques for gaining pediatric physician support, methods for tracking and trending program success, and more. You can order your copy today. Thank you again for joining us for today's Actus podcast episode, Sheila. I'm really excited to have you here today to talk about malnutrition, because I think that's just something that so many facilities are dealing with. So before we take a closer look at the quality improvement project your facility initiated, I wanted to just get everyone on the same page from a clinical perspective. I know it's a little bit basic, but if you'll indulge me for a minute, I'd love to just ask you, what exactly is malnutrition? How is it diagnosed? And given your background in peds, does it present differently in the pediatric population?
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. My name is Sheila Snyder. I'm a pediatric hospitalist and also a physician advisor for our CDI program at Children's Nebraska, which is where I've worked for a couple of decades now. And it is different. Malnutrition is a little bit different in pediatrics, and our definitions are different in pediatrics, which won't be a surprise to anyone who does both peds and adult medicine, because most of our definitions are different in pediatrics. We pay really close attention to growth in pediatrics, and I'm looking at growth charts in every patient I see in the hospital, but especially kids who are worried about their nutrition, right? And so there's been a couple different looks at malnutrition on the inpatient side for pediatrics, and there's one study that shows 40% of pediatric ICU patients are malnourished, and like 23% of inpatients for peds are malnourished. So it's a huge problem, and definitely something to be explored. It is malnutrition or undernutrition is something that affects healing post-surgery. It affects length of stay for almost every disease process that could bring you into the hospital. It affects things on so many levels for healing in the hospital and healing from an injury, surgery, any of those things. So chronic illness. So I think it's definitely an important thing for CDI as far as picking up on malnutrition. And it's something I think often we assume when we see a patient that looking at their growth chart and their growth over time, they've had malnutrition, but we don't always document it. So I think it's an opportunity for CDISs to really affect a patient's length of stay in the hospital and documentation to really do some good work for that patient's credit for how severely ill they are. So I think it's really an important diagnosis, and I think we often maybe don't give it the importance that it deserves or overlook it. And we may know that that patient's malnourished, but the providers don't always write it down in the chart. But yes, PEDS is different than adult medicine. In pediatrics for malnutrition, we use definitions based on an Aspen criteria, which is the GI Society for Nutrition. And Aspen has published several papers on malnutrition, and they recently did one on neonatal malnutrition as well, which we didn't have a good definition till a few years ago. But for pediatric malnutrition, we look at markers on their growth chart and history, of course, of the patient too. But the malnutrition definitions that we use from Aspen are kind of 3 degrees of malnutrition: severe malnutrition, moderate malnutrition, and mild malnutrition. And it's based on growth parameters, basically looking at a Z-score on their growth chart, which is easy to see in your EMR. If you hover over a growth chart number, you should be able to have a Z-score that pops up with the percentile that that number is. And the Z-score being less than a -3 would put you in a severe category. If you're looking at a Z-score for height for weight, BMI for age, those Z-scores we look at, not just weight in specific, but weight with some degree of height calculation. So if you're looking at those Z-scores, and if you're a -3 or more, that's severe malnutrition. If you're between -2 and -3, that's moderate malnutrition. And a Z-score of a -1 to -2 would be mild malnutrition. So that's usually what we're using to at least screen these patients and start the conversation. Do you think that this is malnutrition? And what degree do you think this patient is? And sometimes there is a discrepancy because they're height may be quite different, or weight might be quite different, whereas one Z-score might be a -2 and another Z-score might be more than that. So it is worth a discussion. And the dietitians at my hospital have a screening system where they'll have a dietitian aide or tech come to see the patient, and they look through their growth parameters and they flag the charts that are abnormal for one of the actual dietitians to review. So we have kind of a system for how this works at my children's hospital. And I think all children's hospitals have dietitians who can review charts, and other hospitals also have that ability. I don't know if they're reviewing all charts, but they may be.
Yeah. So I'm glad you brought up that collaboration with the dietitians, because I think that's a nice segue into what I wanted to really focus on talking about today. And thank you so much for that great introduction and overview of malnutrition in pediatrics. But I know you had mentioned when you and I were talking before this podcast that the organization you're at took on a really collaborative quality improvement project related to malnutrition. So I want to look at that. Can you tell me what spurred that initiative? What were physician advisors like yourself and CDI specialists seeing that was problematic, or that you identified as a concern or something to work on?
Yeah, good question. So, you know, we embark on some quality improvements and quality improvement projects and documentation frequently. And malnutrition just seems to be one that providers are recognizing, but maybe not documenting. It was one of our top queries for our CDIS nurses, that they sent so many queries for malnutrition. And it was frustrating because this is something we've done education with providers about. The dietitians are also documenting in their notes, but the dietitian's note doesn't get counted as far as what qualifies for something that coders can use, right? And so we really were like, how are we missing this diagnosis? It's everywhere and yet not where it needs to be in the chart, right? And so, and an important diagnosis for patient care. So the CDI team went and met with the dietitians to try to come up with a plan for how could we make this better. The dietitians are working hard to put this in their notes in the chart. We actually changed the template that they used so that the very top line of their note, that's the most visible, is the diagnosis and what degree of malnutrition or obesity, whatever their nutrition diagnosis is, shows up in that top line of their note. And so we thought, okay, great, we've made it more visible. This will affect our queries and get people to put it in the note. And it didn't make as big an effect as we had hoped for. So that was the first start in our education. And we had really tried hard because we knew this was such a high percentage of our patients that we really wanted to get to it. So we met again with the dietitians and kind of talked it through. And one of the ideas we came up with, we are using an Epic templated note format for our progress notes, H&Ps, and discharge summaries. And they bring the problem list into the templated note at our facility at Children's Nebraska. And so in order to affect a diagnosis that a provider has put in their note, we have now come up with a plan that the dietitian, after their evaluation of the patient and specific type of malnutrition diagnosis, if it's not in the problem list, the dietitian will add that malnutrition specific diagnosis into the problem list. That problem list then follows into the templated progress note, H&P, and discharge summary, if it's in that problem list. And then a provider seeing that acknowledges that that is in the problem list, they put something in their assessment one-liner and plan about malnutrition and what they're doing to treat that problem or assess it, however they're addressing that problem. And then it's accepted as a diagnosis from our coding folks. So we really have helped this problem immensely. So our CDI friends are now communicating more with the dietitians about malnutrition diagnoses than they are with the providers, which is a relief to the providers. This was our top query, our top query by numbers prior to this project starting. And since we've been doing it this way, it actually has decreased by about 50% the queries for malnutrition, which is huge because we always worry about providers and query fatigue, seeing the same things over and over again. I tell providers all the time when I teach them about CDI, I really want you to put me out of business. I want you to learn all things and then do documentation the right way so you put my job out of business. But somehow I don't think that's ever gonna happen. We're just human and we forget things, right? So
absolutely.
Does help to have the experts of nutrition, the dietitians in our hospital, adding that to the problem list, and then the providers acting on that addition. So it's really changed how we document malnutrition at my hospital. And I think we're much more exact and detailed in our documentation for malnutrition. And I think we're addressing it more, which is probably the more important part, is that we're recognizing it and really addressing it while they're still inpatient and we can affect it. So, I think in so many ways, it's obviously, decreased our queries and decreased that provider fatigue of receiving so many queries. But I think most importantly, we're treating patients appropriately. We're getting credit for the length of stay they need if that affects, surgery or healing or whatever it may affect. So I think that in all fields, it's really helped us immensely. I wish there was a whole list of CDI queries that we send and diagnoses that we could do a similar fix for, because I would do all the workarounds we could to get our providers to have less queries. But I think this is one that's worked really clearly for our hospital and has really helped us. So. Yeah, it's been great. It's a good project.
Absolutely. And just based on everything you've said with the decrease in queries, the more accurate capture, the you're better able to treat the patients that present with this. It just sounds like it really has been an overwhelming success at your organization. And based on everything you've said, so many different people had their hands in this project. It was truly a collaborative effort, whether it was the CDI professionals, dietitians, physician advisors, providers. What was it like getting all of those different groups working together and collaborating? Were there challenges? What kind? And how did you overcome them to get to this great success?
I think there have been, you know, a few challenges. I think every project brings its, you know, barriers and things you have to work around. But I think in this case, the dietitians were a little bit reluctant at the start to put something in the problem list. And, you know, it's definitely a domain of providers for our inpatients at the hospital. Our CDI nurses and providers can add to the problem list. Our CDIS nurses don't add to the problem list unless they've talked to a provider and had a discussion about it. And if it still is a diagnosis missing in the problem list, the CDIS will just remedy that, overlooking putting in the problem list. But our dietitians hadn't done that. They do see outpatients in clinic, and nurses and dietitians all add to the problem list outpatient at our facility and clinic, but they don't do it for inpatients. So it was a little bit of a barrier, like they were just concerned about adding to the problem list and that somebody would be upset. But we did a lot of education with providers. Actually, my pediatric intensivist requested that the dietitians help them with this problem because they knew they overlooked it, and they knew that the dietitians were looking specifically at this malnutrition problem. And so they really wanted the help of the people who are experts and can look at all the data and give us recommendations. So the dietitians, I think, appreciated that it had been requested by some of the docs. And I think that made them feel a little bit more comfortable that this was, you know, something that we all wanted their help with and their expertise in, to proceed forward with a plan. So that was a little bit of a barrier to overcome with them. We still will have some dietitians that are a little bit reluctant. Our CDISs are still reviewing all, you know, inpatient charts. And so if they happen upon a chart where malnutrition is present for that patient, but hasn't been documented yet or is in process, they may send an email to the dietitian saying, did you see this one? And can you make a comment on this one? Because they may not have gotten to it yet, or et cetera. So we like it to be in the chart as soon as we can, so it can affect the patient's stay, if possible, and we can treat it while we're there. So we do look at that pretty closely too, but those are probably just some of the more minor barriers. The providers were all for it. I don't think we had a problem there at all. I haven't heard any negative feedback from providers. They want all the help they can get to do this better without all the messages from the CDISs. Help and remove some of that from them. So they're all for it, and they're really pleased with the results too. It just is another reminder, like, oh, this patient does have malnutrition. We need to look at the dietitian's note and figure out how we're going to treat that for this patient. So it helps them too. It helps them take better care of their patients, which is really what we're all here for in the end. So
absolutely. And just to really clarify, are there any compliance concerns or anything like that related to the dietitians adding the malnutrition to the problem list?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are not adding. So they're adding it to the problem list, but they're not adding it to progress notes or changing progress notes. That is really the provider who is using that problem list in their progress note. They have to, you know, obviously any templated note where they're adding things to one of their progress notes, I as a provider, I'm always responsible for my documentation. And so any templated note that I use, I'm still reading through everything that gets added for me, because sometimes things are not accurate or something's, you know, wonky in the templated note that comes through, and you're like, oh, that doesn't make sense how that reads. And I might edit it then, or take something out that doesn't make sense. Not to throw my residents under the bus, they do a great job, but sometimes their documentation isn't entirely accurate as to a differential diagnosis or something that they put in the note. So I'll take that out, or some of my colleagues will strike through a part of the note that a learner has written that they don't agree with. But I think that all of those are tools, right? So using a templated note is a tool we use. I, as a provider, I'm still responsible for the final product. So we really haven't had any compliance issues doing this. I think there are other children's hospitals and other entities that do it different ways. I'm not, you know, so sure about replacing words and doing things like that. You can do that with like an Epic Dictionary. We haven't gone to that at Children's Nebraska. We just want it to be more obvious to the providers when they're doing their note that they need to make a comment on that and address it in the plan if we're going to count that from a billing and compliance standpoint. So I think that from our perspective, this is the way we have decided to move forward with it. And I think it's going really well as far as providers recognizing that that's in the problem list. That problem list is coming into their note and they have to address it. You know, all of us are responsible for our own notes in the end. And if you're not spending time to read and edit those notes, I think that's a different kind of problem that's not really, you know, I guess compliance is an issue, but not for this particular malnutrition diagnosis plan. I think it's an easy way to kind of remind providers that it's there and then have them address it themselves in the note. So I think that's the key to making it compliant.
Yes. And thank you for that detailed explanation. I think compliance is just always at the forefront of everyone's mind. So I just really wanted to hammer that home and take a second to talk about it. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Sure. Yes.
We are just about out of time, but before we wrap up, I wanted to ask one final question. What are some like key takeaways or major takeaways from this project that you think others could apply at their own organization?
Yeah, you know, I think every EMR is a little bit different and how it's set up is a little bit different. And it may not work at your organization to have use of the problem list. I know that people think the problem list is a problem, but I think in our case, it is actually helpful. One of the things that we do to make the problem list helpful, just as a tip or trick for folks, is we're doing team focused rounding. And so we do like family focused round at the bedside where we're reviewing the problem list as part of our list of things we review in rounds every day. We have like a template for rounds and reviewing the problem list is part of that. So we are hopefully looking at that, taking things out of the problem list that are no longer problems, adding specificity to the problem list when we get test results back or something that gives us an indication of, you know, complexity of a particular illness that would add to the description. And so we'll add that to the problem list. And those reviews during rounds every day keep that problem list pertinent. And the fact that we use it in our notes also encourages us to make sure it's up to date. I know some organizations don't use the problem list in their note and then nobody's like reviewing it and it's just a bunch of junk. And I understand that too. I think we use it at Children's Nebraska as a tool to help keep us up to date on what's going on and really keep monitoring what are actually still problems and what problems need a more specific diagnosis is something we're talking about every day. And I think the use of the problem list is really makes it as relevant as possible for our organization. I think if you're not using it and you're not using it in your notes, I understand why nobody would care about it. But I think that's maybe one of the issues that this wouldn't work at every organization. But I think it really does help. We have dietitians and they're doing their job, which is, you know, being the expert on malnutrition and treatment and feeding pediatric patients. And so I really appreciate using their expertise in care of my patients. And that's reflected in our notes. So I appreciate their work.
Thank you so much, Sheila. This was such an interesting conversation. And I hope that listeners find it helpful and are able to apply some of this in their own every day, especially the collaboration with all of these different roles. Unfortunately, we did run out of time, but as always, if our audience has any questions about this topic, you can feel free to email the ACTIS team at info@actis.org. And again, Sheila, thanks so much for taking the time to be here today and share what's going on at Children's Nebraska. Really appreciate it.
Of course. I always love to talk to you, Carla.
Oh, thank you. Now it's time for the ACTIS update, a regular segment featuring the latest news on what's going on inside the association. And today I'm going to focus on some exciting ACTIS 2026 conference updates. First and foremost, registration for the conference is now open. So as a reminder, the conference will take place from April 20th to the 23rd in Chicago. And we invite you to join us to empower yourself and your team. The agenda is also available using the link in today's show notes. You'll see we've got 5 tracks again this year. You'll see returning favorites such as clinical encoding, leadership and collaboration, and quality and denials management. However, you'll also see 2 new tracks, one focused on technology and analytics, and another dedicated exclusively to pediatrics and neonatology. Registration is also open for our 3 pre-conference events. We have the Physician Advisor Forum, which is a 2-day event dedicated exclusively to physician advisors and their unique role in CDI. We have the ACTIS Symposium Outpatient CDI, which focuses on outpatient efforts. And then this year we have our CCDS Exam Prep Pre-Conference, which is an intensive 2-day course that focuses on preparing those who are getting ready to take the CCDS exam. So you can register for all of these pre-conference events and the ACTIS conference using the link in today's show notes. I also want to share that the applications for posters are now open as well and will be open through December 12th. So posters share something exciting that you've participated in or that's going on at your organization, some sort of unique win or initiative, a project or a collaboration that you think others could learn from. They're displayed in the exhibit hall, and we do have a special dedicated networking break where we ask all of the posters creators to stand by their posters and answer questions as people walk around and view them. Additionally, one person per selected poster will receive $200 off their conference registration. So again, you can apply now using the link in today's show notes, and do be sure to get your application in by December 12th. Lastly, we've also opened nominations for our annual ACTIS Achievement Awards. These are awards that recognize significant contributions to the profession. Recipients are recognized in a ceremony at the annual ACTIS conference. This year, we are accepting nominations for 4 different awards. We have the CDI Professional of the Year, which recognizes someone who's really dedicated their career to CDI. They must have at least 10 years of experience in the industry and have just made significant contributions to the profession. Then we have the Accomplishment in CDI Award, which recognizes someone that's maybe newer to the profession. They only have to have 2 years of experience, but that has done a lot in that time, both for CDI or for their team, their organization. So it's another way to recognize someone. We have the Melissa Varnavas Spirit of Service Award, which is named in honor of our late colleague, Melissa Varnavas, and it recognizes outstanding CDI service and dedication. So somebody that is volunteering their time, whether it's to a local chapter, to committees, to anything involved with CDI, and that just really imbues that spirit that Melissa really embodied, which is just a general passion for CDI and for helping others advance their careers in CDI. And then lastly, we have the Diversity in CDI Award, which recognizes CDI teams and departments that are going out of their way to make CDI an inclusive place where all can feel welcome. Now, again, just like with the posters, the deadline to nominate someone is December 12th. So while you've got some time to think about it, I do want to encourage you to submit your nomination sooner rather than later. You can use the link in today's show notes for the nomination form, as well as to access the posters applications and the ACTIS agenda and registration page. We hope to see you participating in the 2026 conference. As a reminder before we close out, each ACTIS podcast episode offers 0.5 ACTIS CEUs, which can be used towards recertifying your CCDS or CCDSO credential for those who listen to the show in the first 4 days from the time of publication. To receive your 0.5 CEU, go to the show page on ACTIS.org by clicking on the ACTIS podcast link under the free resources tab, and then select today's episode from the list on that page. Then you'll scroll down to the recording and press play. At the end of the video, once the timer hits 0, a link to the CEU evaluation will appear. Click on that, take the survey, and your certificate will be automatically emailed to you upon submitting the brief evaluation. To ensure your certificate reaches you and does not get trapped in your organization's spam filters, we suggest that you use a personal email address when completing the CEU evaluation form. These instructions are also laid out on the show page, so you can follow along there if you'd like. The cutoff for today's episode is Sunday, October 26th at 11 p.m. Eastern. After that point, the CEU period will close and you will not be eligible for the 0.5 CEU for this week's episode. And with that, we've reached the end of today's Actus Podcast episode, but we'll be back in 2 weeks on Wednesday, November 5th with a new episode hosted by several members of the Actus editorial team. If you'd like to receive reminders about each episode, make sure you subscribe to our free weekly newsletter, CDI Strategies, which always includes a link to the new episode when it's available. You can listen to the show at any time on the Actus website or via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. All the links we discussed during today's episode will be available in the show notes. And as always, we'd really appreciate it if you'd take a minute to leave us a 5-star review on your podcast app to help others find our show. Our jazz intro and outro music is Media Noche by Deanne Key, and our ad music is Take Me Higher by Jazar, both of which are obtained from the Free Music Archive. If you have any suggestions for future guests or topics, please email us at info@actus.org. And until next time, take care, everyone.